Welcome to the first interview for my project, Profiles in Influence, with Dr. John McCartney. Dr. McCartney is a professor at Lafayette College in Easton, Pennsylvania, and has an extensive background in black studies both in America and in his homeland in the Bahamas. Dr. McCartney ran for political office in the Bahamas in the 1970s and served as president of the island's Socialist Vanguard Party into the early 80s. Through his political work, he met many influential figures and worked to improve racial issues left over from the colonization period. Before joining the Lafayette faculty in 1986, McCartney earned a doctorate in political history from the University of Iowa, a master's in history from the University of Detroit, and a BA in political science from Drake. The head of the government and law department at Lafayette, he has taught courses focused on the Caribbean, Latin America, and black history spanning from Africa to the Caribbean through the United States. I chose to interview Dr. McCartney because he has served as an ambassador for his people and his country, and now he has dedicated his life to teaching young people about the history of his people. He emphasized his belief in teaching minority youth that they are worthwhile and to care about bettering themselves through education instead of focusing on the superficial images often presented by the media. He talked about how he views the history of black people as one of discovery and revelation, instead of the way it is commonly viewed as one of complaint and strife. I sat down with Dr. McCartney, somewhat expecting to be educated about my study by a man who has seen and experienced far more in this area than I can even imagine. Instead, what took place was a conversation in which he explained the need for more people to recognize the focus of my study and shared his life experiences relating to his racial identity and the racial identity of American minorities. I now proudly present my interview with Dr. John McCartney. Can I, just to start off, get a sense of what your background is as far as your profession and what you've done thus far?
Well, that'd probably take up the whole
interview. Yes.
Originally from the Bahamas, I had a PhD from the University of Iowa, taught at Purdue, and been at Lafayette since 1986. My specialty is, of course, comparative government and black politics. And by black, I include African-American, African, Caribbean, wherever we have the black presence. My courses focus on that and its meaning for the world and meaning for black people. So it's, I would say, comparative and interdisciplinary focus has been the focus of my work. And my book, Black Power Ideologies, as you know, is one of the classic works on that movement, and in which I sought to what you're doing now, in a sense. At the time, the Black Power movement was being depicted as something un-American, as something violent, as something I'm not worth paying serious attention to. And that was a stereotype. And my book showed, attempted to show, that really it was really a serious discussion. The whole Black Power movement was a serious discussion about what America is, where it should be going, and what is the best vision for the future. So when I wrote the book, I tried to show that instead of being the kind of loose aggregate of complaints, both violent and nonviolent, it was really one of the creative moments in American development.
I'd say it's fair to say that your career has been focused on race, or at least that's been one of the main focuses. How do you begin a career that is focused on, or a life that is focused on the issue of race?
Well, you know, when you say focus, of course, to even talk meaningfully about race, you have to be exposed to other things. We don't exist in a vacuum. In fact, I would argue that people who deal in race questions have to be even better informed about the general picture than those who are not, because of context. But my sort of rationale is that it's not so much race that you're talking about, but you're talking about telling the story of a people that has been either not told or been distorted, and that adds so much to the U.S. pluralism. So it's really an effort of discovery and revelation rather than one of complaint. People think in terms of complaining. It's not that at all. It's a revelation that we're looking at here.
Can you tell me a bit about growing up?
Yeah, well, I sort of two things. Growing up in the Bahamas to begin with, unlike most of the Caribbean countries, for that matter, African countries, except a few, we did have a country controlled by a white minority. And the white minority, which had links, by the way, to the U.S. plantation system and so forth, they exercise a great deal of discrimination against non-whites, black people in that country. So part of the struggle for independence there was to mobilize blacks to a realization of their power so that they could recreate a better society than the whites were inflicting on us. So I saw race as a factor in this case, race was a factor of domination. So the whole idea was to remove that as an issue. And that could only be done by having black majority rule, which eventually came. Transferring it to the United States, we find, though blacks are a minority, you found the same kind of limits put on blacks, some more severe, some less severe than I've been accustomed to in Bahamas. But the whole idea was, the challenge was essentially the same. How do you mobilize first black people in this country, and secondly, sensitize the rest of society as to the need for inclusion, not just on sympathy's sake, but to enrich the society. Mm-hmm. To me, that was the big challenge. Transferring from one country to another really didn't make that much of a difference psychologically for me.
What would you say some of your interests and aspirations were as a child? I think that right now, or at least during my childhood, the only figures I saw were athletes and celebrities, and so I wanted to be one of them because I thought that being black meant that was one of them. Those were kind of your two career alternatives, career paths, choices.
I think one of the drives for us as a people at the time, black people, was to correct the sense of powerlessness that we had, not only in terms of economic and political power, opportunity, but in terms of creating a society in which being black was not a negative. And that's the future, my growing up. How do we do this? How do we create a situation in which, and this is floating around here, the fact that you're black is not a debit against you for life. So the question is, within that context, what do you do? Because you look around, all the books were written for really the British or what have you, by them, for them, for their purposes, of which you were just a subject. So most people, but in our case was, what talents can we use to reverse the situation. I felt that some kind of intellectual pursuit that engaged you in contending with these objectives or some, was what I would like to be involved in. I couldn't say exactly what it was at the time, but I knew it had to be something involved in contending with these issues. Mm-hmm. Wound up, you know, studying for doctrine and so forth enabled me to do that. I was also involved in practical politics out in the Bahamas, but that was only a sort of practical sort of application of the intellectual drive that I had from the beginning.
Would you say that the kind of experience you had in Bahamas and at the end of your earlier life kind of helped you form your racial identity or your identity at all?
I think so. Mm-hmm. I think so. I think one of the things that it helped to confirm me and people like me was you have a sense of dignity. You can't let these forces rob you of your worth, whether it's whites or what have you. You are worth something. So I'm saying one of the big lessons that were drilled into us was, regardless of what the images are, what is portrayed, you are worthwhile. And having that confidence that you are worth something enables you, I think, to stand up and, you know, take stands and even be creative in a way that, if that's not there, it's very difficult to do.
Do you think that's present today in American society, the worthwhile? Do you think that we're improving at all on making young minority youth feel worthwhile?
To some degree, but still there's a lot remains to be done. Mm-hmm.
And what would you say is the media's influence in that?
I think the media, your survey has so much resonance for me. Let me give you an example of why, and this would relate to the other questions. Shirley Chisholm was the first black woman to run for president. She ran for president of the United States. Great, great black leader she was. When I was in politics in the Bahamas, I happened to meet Shirley one day. We talked. And I said to her, I say, Shirley, you know, I'm so sad you're out of politics. You spoke up for the country, you stood for black people, for women. You gave America an image of what it should be that, I mean, it needs to keep striving for. I told her, we were talking. And you know what she said to me? She said, Dr. McCartney, she said, an unfortunate thing is happening in the U.S. She says, people like myself, we come from the grassroots, etc. We are not concerned about PR. Said, people like us in politics are becoming and will become more and more extinct. She said, politics now has become like entertainment. They're looking for someone who looks good in the media. They're looking for someone who can give a certain image. They're looking for someone who dresses a certain way. Say, that serious kind of devoted leadership style, leadership, that's going by the boards. Everything now is PR. And I thought, she says so, you know, unfortunately, it's PR politics now. It's not idea politics anymore. And Shirley hit on something that has transformed the country, man. Superficiality. You mentioned athletes, or even sometimes movie people being depicted as leaders for blacks, as role models for blacks. When you have black intellectuals, black professors, black people who have achieved in all sorts of fields. You're not even mentioned. You don't know they even exist.
That's exactly what I'm getting at. Is, do you think it's possible that we can make these career alternatives, these becoming a black intellectual, becoming, you know, something besides the movie star? Do you think that's possible? Is making that more appealing, or at least more prevalent in today's media?
It's more needed than ever.
Yeah.
But I'm not so sure that that's going to be easy to do. Because these images are now so embedded in the society, so rewarded. It's not just there, they're also rewarded. That it's so difficult for serious black people, or for that matter, any people, but especially blacks, etc., to even get a hearing. So, I think the process, Max, is going to be very slow. And the process of change probably will come through as we get more and more blacks going to colleges, traveling abroad. You go to represent America in India, let's say, they don't give a damn. They're not interested in how you look or how you carry the football. They're interested in, does he represent his country well, and does he do the job well? They're not interested in that. So as more blacks exposed to education, travel, and see how this superficiality is really killing our image even abroad. Nobody. But I think slowly but surely you're going to get change. People questioning this.
I think I would argue that the media's portrayal not only creates this superficial sense, but it also is hurting the black person's image around America. I think that incidents with athletes such as like bringing guns into the arena and things like that have, I'm not sure if you heard this, but on January 19th, a guy tried to create an all-white basketball league to not only upstage Martin Luther King Day, but also to level the playing field, as he said, because there were no white players in the National Basketball Association. Can you comment a little bit on how these media portrayals have been not only superficial, but also negative?
Oh, they've been definitely. In fact, to follow up on the negativity, how do people view African Americans abroad?
Yeah.
Exactly. They're looking at the athlete, they're looking at the superficial. That's what they see. So when you say black, boom, out comes these superficial images that they play up here about black people. So it's hurting black people abroad. You mention black, this thing comes out, you know, these people are happy-go-lucky, and you know what I mean, the whole thing, and they're carrying footballs and playing basketball, etc. That's the image. So even abroad, especially abroad, the images we see here are transposed. So the world sees us in these terms. Very seldom do they see, just for example, art form, gospel, the spiritual. Spirituals are now worldwide, all over the world, people singing spirituals. That came out of the black experience. That's a positive image, positive reflection of what black people are. You know, not all art is bad, you know what I mean? So you got a positive image. Everybody in the world singing spiritual, like spirituals. Mm-hmm. Maybe too, you know, this Obama being the president, whatever he does there. But at least his background, I mean, I'm not judging what kind of president he's going to be, but the fact that he has been exposed to the best in American education and all of